Newsday presents the Island Ice Podcast with Andrew Gross.
And welcome to Island Ice, episode 186 of Newsday's New York Islanders Podcast. This episode entitled, "Hey Baby, We're Going to the Playoffs." And hi, I'm Andrew Gross of Newsday, joined by my Newsday colleague, Neil Best, who is now officially a hockey writer again. Is that not correct?
Mostly. Things come up sometimes. Sometimes Yankees radio announcers retire. But yes, I am mostly a hockey writer from now until, whether it's the Islanders Cup Parade or the Rangers Cup Parade, we'll see. But I am in it until the end. I'm shocked. I was assigned to cover the Islanders regular season finale against the Penguins with the original assumption it would be a kind of a post-mortem on their season. And then I was assigned it on the assumption that, well, this will be an exciting do-or-die battle with the Penguins for the last playoff spot. And it turned out the Islanders just got things done early, which all credit to them, because it's shocking considering where they were on March 31st.
Yeah, and as Neil has just laid out on the table, the Islanders and Penguins are concluding the regular season. We speak to you around 4 p.m. on a Wednesday from UBS Arena, with the fine smells of the upcoming media meal wafting through this little meal hall here. But this game is, to call it meaningless is not fair to the players. Some players certainly have things to play for. For instance, the Islanders just called up Ruslan Ishikov from Bridgeport, and he'll make his NHL debut tonight. But in terms of standings, playoff implications, everything is set. The Islanders will play a rematch with the Carolina Hurricanes in the first round. The Hurricanes, of course, eliminated the Islanders in six games last season. That was all locked in on Monday night when the Islanders rather methodically beat the Devils 4-1. That increased their season-high point streak to 7-0-1. So you want to be playing your best hockey going into the playoffs. The Islanders certainly can say that. They locked into third place in the Metropolitan Division, while the Hurricanes were locked into second place, not by their own doing, but by the Rangers clinching the President's Trophy, first place in the Metro and first place in the Eastern Conference with a win on Monday night over the Ottawa Senators. So the Hurricanes finished second. They will host games 1 and 2. We're still waiting from the league for that schedule as to when we all head down to Raleigh. So, Neil, let's start here. This is a rematch of last year's first round when the Islanders lost in six games to the Hurricanes. Six hard-fought games, some close games. I think two of them Islanders lost twice in overtime. From your vast knowledge of hockey and what you've seen this season of the Islanders, what do you think could be different this year?
Well, I don't think anything has to be dramatically different for them to win the series. Like you said, it was a close, hard-fought series. The Hurricanes, this might be a better Hurricanes team than that one was. They're playing well, just like the Islanders are. So I don't think anything has to be radically different if, of course, the Islanders keep doing what they've been doing so far in April, because what they've been doing is a winning formula. And, look, we've all said it a million times. They're a playoff-style team. They have the experience for the playoffs. They're, in theory, they're better suited to the playoffs than a regular season. So, you got two pretty hot teams here and two good teams. Well, Carolina's had a better season overall, of course. But, I mean, to me, I would not be remotely shocked for the Islanders to win this series, just like it wouldn't have been shocking for them to win last year. They had their chances.
Right. And now we mentioned the Islanders coming into the season finale against the Penguins on a 7-0-1 run. And we'll talk a little bit about this, but that's mainly been backstopped by Semyon Varlamov instead of Ilya Sorokin. Meanwhile, the Hurricanes, they lost their season finale in Columbus. That was a game that had no playoff implications either. I don't know, how hard the Hurricanes went at that game. But they end their season, if I'm recalling, that's a 16-4-2 run for the Hurricanes, and that dates back to March 7th, And that is the exact date that goalie Frederik Andersen returned to the Hurricanes lineup after being out since November 2nd with a blood clotting issue. So the Hurricanes, you talk about playing your best hockey. The Hurricanes certainly going into the playoffs doing that. We've seen the Hurricanes, these two teams, very familiar with each other. The Hurricanes third in the league in shots on net. I think going into the game against the Blue Jackets, they had an average of 33.2 shots on net per game. In contrast, the Islanders were down in the standings. I think they were around 19th at around 30 shots per game. So the Hurricanes usually dominate the shots on goal. What the Islanders have done well against the Hurricanes when they've had success against the Hurricanes is keep everything to the outside, limit the rebounds, and also don't give the Hurricanes too many power plays, because the Hurricanes do have a good power play. The Islanders, Neil, we've talked about this so much, you know, on the podcast, in the car driving to UBS Arena. We've written about this. It's pretty much the same Islanders team, right?
Yeah, well, I was saying earlier that, you know, I do have a lot of varied, you know, duties in my job, but the beauty of it is when I'm assigned to do the Islanders, even if it's been a couple months or a couple years, or I show up and it's all the same players. So it's very easy to get caught back up to speed. But, you know, it's like I wrote a column today that, I mean, I was skeptical of this whole group being kept together and Lou is just sticking with this core. And, I mean, you got to give them credit. They somehow got it done again. Obviously, they'll be judged by what happens from here on in. But you would think that experience is going to benefit them in the playoffs. The goalie thing, well, as you said, the Hurricanes goalie situation got dramatically better and it showed. And that's one of the challenges of facing them. But the Islanders' goalie situation is fascinating to me. I mean, I remember the night before the trade deadline 2 years ago asking Barry Trotz questions, not only whether they would trade Varlamov, it was more like under the assumption they would. I was sort of asking him, I don't remember the exact wording, but the questioning was more like, you know, what's the plan at goalie when Varlamov's gone? And he's like, what do you mean? And, of course, Lou stuck with him, and, like, here we are, two coaches later, one of whom's maybe the best goalie of all time, and the probable game one starter is Varlamov. It's amazing to me that this has played out this way.
Yeah, look, Semyon has been very low key about it. He played Ilya Sorokin starting against the Penguins, so he gets the regular season finale. But before this, Varlamov started 8 of 12 games. And again, you know, that's through the heart of this 7-0-1 run that really fueled, you know, a playoff berth. The Islanders were still 5 points out of a playoff spot on March 31st. We're only 2 weeks past that. And, you know, and look, we can all say what we want about this Eastern Conference playoff race for the final two spots. It was probably not the most artistic playoff race of all time. And quite fittingly, it ends in Philly the other night when the Washington Capitals secured the second wild card spot and a berth against the Rangers in the first round on an empty net goal in a 1-1 game with 3 minutes left, because the Flyers coach, John Tortorella, not realizing literally in real time his team had just been eliminated from playoff contention by the Red Wings, who had taken their game into overtime, which eliminated the Flyers. Torts, not realizing this, thinking the Flyers needed to get a regulation win to still be alive, he pulls his goalie, Ersson, with over 3 minutes left to get that regulation win. And the Caps, TJ Oshie, I believe, scores an empty netter for a 2-1 win. So I thought that was the perfect exclamation mark on what we've seen in this, you know, who wants it playoff race.
Well, but that, yeah, I mean, but that's, of course, what opened the door for the Islanders is everybody else not seeming to want it. But, you know, you got to give credit to the team that did seem like they wanted it, which was the Islanders. And, you know, the idea that they even finished third instead of having to get in on a wild card just makes it even stranger. So, yeah, the Torts thing, it's a rare time where I sort of felt bad for Torch because he was like, it wasn't his fault, and it was, but it was so awkward, and he's being asked about it, and of course you'd be frustrated if you're a Red Wings fan, but I mean, come on, it, you know, if you wanted to be in it, just win more games, and don't worry about the other team pulling their goalie. So especially with these teams in the Islanders, you know, vicinity, which are, you know, they're above 500, they're above NHL 500, they're not above real world 500 when you factor in their overtime losses. So these teams have nothing to complain about, and the Islanders, and of course the Islanders have nothing to complain about playing, you know, with this tough of a matchup. But yeah, they've given themselves a chance, and obviously we all know in the NHL playoffs it's like rarely does reason play any role in this. There's a lot of random things that are about to happen.
I'm sure at one point we're going to see a much lower seed of course knock off an upper seed. It happens on a yearly basis.
On a self, you know, I know this is an Islanders podcast, but as a journalist who likes good stories, I would prefer the Rangers not to be knocked off, because I would like to see the second round matchup be Rangers Islanders. I mean, we don't root for teams, we root for stories, and therefore I'm allowed to root for that story. And I want to see the Rangers and Islanders play each other.
Yes, well, I mean, going back to the last Ranger-Islander game, that shootout at the Garden, honestly, probably, you know, top two, top three games I've seen all season. And if you give me a seven-game Islander-Ranger, that would be hockey heaven. That is, of course, whatever cliche you want to use, touching the money, looking far ahead.
Lou Lamoriello and his players can't say what you just said, but you and I are allowed to say what you just said.
Getting back to Varlamov, one of the things I've noticed during this run, and I think it's emanated out to the rest of the team, is he plays such a calm game. There's not a lot of movement with him. He's positionally very sound. You know, maybe not always the most aggressive goalie, but he is able to track and absorb pucks, and I think that's the key word there, absorb. He's not giving up a ton of rebounds. I know one of the goals the other night, or the only goal to the Devils, was one that, you know, the initial shot popped out, I think by Jesper Bratt, popped out of Varley's glove, and Timo Meier was there to pop it in. But for the most part, Varley has been really good with his rebound control. He's been really good on his angles. He's been really good, like I said, not even if he doesn't see the puck, his body is in the right position for pucks coming through traffic. And he plays a little bit of a different style than Ilya Sorokin, who is a little, he's more athletic, he's more acrobatic, but there's more movement in Ilya Sorokin's game. And, you know, Patrick Waugh has made it very clear right now that his preferred goalie is Semyon Varlamov. They have a long-standing relationship going back to their days together in Colorado. Waugh's three seasons coaching in Colorado, and he will tell you, he will fight you, that Semyon Varlamov should have won the Vezina Trophy his first year in Colorado. He still is really amazed that Varley did not win it. So you say the likely game one starter, I would think it almost with near certainty.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah. I know. But what does Patrick Waugh know about goaltending? Yeah, and actually, you know, some of that stuff you're talking about the differences between Varlamov and Sorokin, you could see it in that Rangers-Islanders game Saturday. A couple of rebounds, a couple of, you know, I mean, I'm sure Sorokin's going to have a long, successful career.
Yeah.
But at this moment, it seems very clear that that's the way to go. Now, you know, we've all seen things happen. You know, you go down 2-0, you go to the other goalie, he wins 4 in a row. There's a long way to go in this goalie drama.
Yeah.
But at the moment, yeah, you got to give Varlamov credit for doing this, and B, like I said 2 years ago, for Lou not getting rid of him when he seemed like an expensive, unnecessary expensive, you know, insurance or something.
Yeah. I absolutely. He did seem like that, especially when you dole out the contract you did to Ilya Sorokin. But I think that the stuff that you and I probably cannot quantify enough, because we're not in the room, is the relationship with the two, how important that is to both men, and how important that is to the overall team and the team structure. And that is something that Lou is able to see. Now, having said all this, and again, you know, just trying to be objective, the Islanders are in a first round playoff matchup in a week. Can we call it a weak Eastern Conference? I mean, right?
I mean, there's some really, yeah, I guess so. There's some really good teams at the top, but right, the depth is maybe not as even as the West, I guess. But yeah,
yeah. So
it's the NHL. None of this. I mean,
yeah,
things happen. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you and I are both hoping to see Rangers Islanders second round. If for whatever reason the Hurricanes do eliminate the Islanders again in the first round, can Lou and the Islanders organization keep going back to the well and saying we are doing well enough? Or, you know, when is good not good enough?
Right. I mean, obviously that's an extremely fair question that I was thinking about as I was praising them for sneaking into the playoffs again. Because today, sneaking into the playoffs is good enough because that's the goal, to give yourself a chance. But of course, if it doesn't go well, that's what you're saying is also a very legitimate question that we will obviously be asking and fans will be asking, because yeah, I mean, you could sneak into the playoffs in perpetuity, but that's not really the object of the game. So that's a fair question, but we can't really ask it until this thing is over. But yeah, I mean, obviously the odds, you know, statistically the betting wise, the odds are against the Islanders winning this series, and then we'll see what we all say about it. Probably what you just said, that this is better than not making the playoffs, but it's not good enough.
Yeah, yeah. Again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's enjoy the playoff games to come. And NHL, if you're listening to me, please release a schedule so I can book a freaking flight to Raleigh.
Wow. Wow, it's this thing's good. Yeah, there's some controversy now on this podcast. Andrew going after the NHL schedule makers. Yeah, I was looking at the NBA, and it's all like everything's all neatly out there. Let's see, it would be nice to get to
No one's ever cared about me, so, you know, we move on, right? But
well, I think I'm assuming fans and players and coaches might like to know when they're playing also.
and it's true. It's not like the media is being, you know, kept out of the story. You know, you go around the room this morning and like, hey, could you just tell me when you're playing? And they're like, we don't know.
By the time people are listening to us, it's possible this will be out, you know.
Yeah, but my frustration lives forever. I didn't want to call game 82 meaningless because there are a couple of things in this game. And again, by the time you hear this, it will be past this game. But I think it's fair to note there are five guys who are going to play all 82 games for the Islanders this season. And that's Anders Lee, that's Brock Nelson, Jean-Gabriel Pageau, Kyle Palmieri, and Cal Clutterbuck. And to me, and I'm not trying to, you know, pump up his tires or anything. To me, the fact that Cal Clutterbuck is playing 82 games at age 36, given that he's never been able to do this before in his career, I just think that's a tremendous accomplishment. I think it speaks so well of Cal, and Cal, of course, being the Masterton Trophy nominee for the Islanders. Note to self, I do need to vote on this. The deadline's coming up. I don't know if you got a chance to talk to Cal or not, but, you know, what does it say to you that Cal, given, you know, the shoulder issues, the wrist injuries, the way he plays this game, that he is in good enough shape and motivated enough to play these 82 games?
And the all-time leader in hits in NHL history, you know, it sort of speaks to his style also, obviously. I mean, he's, like you said, he's kind of the best example, but just in general, having five guys do that is, you know, that's hockey.
Yeah.
That's hockey, Susan. It's because in basketball, as we all know, there's arguments over load management. It happens in baseball and sort of in football, too, but that's usually legitimate broken things. But, Cal Clutterbuck is about as good an example as you can have as the hockey culture in terms of, yeah, playing every game, playing through injuries at that age, and even in a game that doesn't count in the standings. Yeah, you got to give him and all those guys credit because it's just load management just isn't a thing in hockey.
No, it's going to be 194 straight regular season games for Anders Lee. And we all saw the horrific knee injury he went through. So, you know, as I was saying to Cal this morning, you know, as a, you know, ink-stained scribe and not, you know, a finely tuned athlete, to me, it's impressive when any player is able to navigate 82 games, given the physicality and the mental toll that this long season takes on you. I'm really blown away when guys do 82 games.
Well, and then they got 28 more. Like, yeah. I mean, you have to prepare for 28 more. They might not have 28 more. But it's that's another part of the equation here is, you're just doing this knowing that you might play, 110 games.
Yeah.
In this crazy sport and the way Cal plays, and we should obviously, as sports fans, we should admire all professional athletes because they're all freaks of nature and they work like crazy. But there is something about hockey players that's unique. Maybe we're biased because we're hockey people, but these guys are a special kind of crazy.
Yeah. Very endearing. Since we have you here at this fine dinner table, I wanted you to put on your media hat for a couple of different topics. One, you mentioned that's hockey, Susan. John Sterling, you know, he's going to be remembered as the voice of the Yankees. From my childhood, from your childhood, I remember him as the radio voice of the Islanders on YMCA, and as well also of the old New York Nets when they were playing it at Nassau Coliseum. And I know it was tweeted out, Brendan Burke, with a really nice, tribute to John Sterling's days with the Islanders, with the Islander goal.
What turned out to be the last goal of the season.
Yeah, I thought that was
the last goal of the clincher.
Yes, I thought that was a very nice touch on Brendan's part. You have spoken to John over the years in your role as Newsday's media reporter. Have you ever had a conversation with him about his Islander days and what he recalled about those?
Just casually, because I did a story about his Nets days when he came back to do a Nets game a couple of years ago. But I've told him what you just said as a kid. Yeah, I'm so old that by the time John was doing the Yankees, I was a grown up. But that Islanders goal thing, and I was more of a Rangers fan as a kid. Sorry, Islanders podcast listeners. But the reason I was a Rangers fan was because we had them on television in my house and not the Islanders. So my consumption of the Islanders was through the radio. So I got to listen to him a lot and also tried calling into his talk show with some salient hockey point in that era. And, he had the energy. I mean, he still has energy. He still has great pipes. But then he was younger, not even more of it. And that Islanders goal thing was certainly part of my hockey childhood. And he even went back to the WHA. He is a hockey. I mean, he's known more as a baseball guy now, obviously, but he's a legitimate, hockey fan announcer. It's definitely. And he still watches.
Again, that Islander goal, I would, I grew up in Manhattan. I went to junior high school just about 10 blocks from Madison Square Garden. Everyone there was a Ranger fan. I would show up in my Billy Smith jersey and I would emulate, I would do the John Sterling, he had this great, Denny Potvin to brother John, John back to brother Denny, shoots, goal, Islander goal, Islander goal, Islander goal. It was great. I would do that in junior high, and then I would get the living snot beat out of me by all these Ranger fans.
Well, you probably deserved it. But the interesting thing about that era, understandably, most people think, when they think back to that era, the Islanders are obviously thinking of the Cup years. But, he was doing it, mid-70s.
It was before,
And they were just becoming, 74, 75, when they were first becoming a thing.
Yeah.
He was there for that part of the evolution, which was exciting because it was new. By the time they were winning Cups, they had been a good team for several years.
Right, already. And he had moved on to Atlanta by that point.
Right, so he was there for that early, the early days when it was all, becoming something that it eventually became.
Yeah, and item number two on the media checklist here is, I know you were on a conference call today with some of, I believe it was the TNT hockey analysts, previewing the playoffs and just, you know, what stood out there?
I was given the honor of the first question, and I had to ask Biz Nasty about his attitude about the Islanders going into the playoffs, because I did note that he's had some negative things to say about them in the past. And he said, "Oh, I knew I was going to get this question," but he did pick the Hurricanes to win the series.
Yeah.
And he still thinks the Islanders are too slow. But he did say a lot of nice things about what they've done down the stretch, how they've cleaned up their penalty kill, the goalie situation, Patrick Waugh. So Paul Bissonnette is still not a huge Islanders supporter, but he gave credit where it was due for what they've done, even though he said that Carolina will smoke them.
Did he say how many games?
He said 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there was pressure on me actually asking a question to Bissonnette, because my daughter is his biggest fan. So she was very excited that I even asked him a question. I was like, you know, it was on a Zoom. I wasn't like having lunch with him. Yeah. But he dislikes the Islanders much less than he used to, it would appear.
Yeah, and the thing with him and Butchie is much ado about nothing.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's allowed to pick the Hurricanes, obviously, but he gave proper credit to the Islanders.
Yeah. Before ending by bringing back one of my favorite traditions on this podcast and one of Neil's least favorite moments in his life, the musical question to Neil, we haven't touched upon Noah Dobson yet.
No. Oh, that seems like an important topic.
It should be. Yeah. Now, Noah Dobson, upper body injury. He's did not play game number 80, 81, or 82, so he'll miss the last three games of the regular season. He was seen skating on his own today before the Islanders' morning practice. They will supposedly or theoretically have a couple of days here more of recovery before the playoffs start. And look, if Noah Dobson's not in the Islanders' lineup, I would have a very hard time making a case for the Islanders beating the Hurricanes in the first round. That's how important to me Noah Dobson has been the Islanders' MVP this season. Although the way Varley played down the stretch, you might throw him a few votes. But, you know, I know you've seen fewer games, obviously, than me this season. But, you know, what's your sense of how Noah is, you know, just pretty much invaluable to this team?
Yeah, no, that you're right. That would be devastating, and it's actually you can certainly make a case for him being MVP. And I'm hoping, you know, just for the sake of him, and also just for a better series that he plays. His evolution. Well, you've seen his evolution from day one. It's really he's turned into, you know, one of the better young defensemen in the league. And if they don't have him, that would be a shame, you know, on many levels. So I hope he can play.
Well, yeah, no, I certainly, they need him on the top. They need Noah Dobson and Alex Romanov to be a fully functioning top pair, because that allows them to play Pelech with Pulak. And between those four defensemen and, you know, Riley, Bortuzzo, Riley, Aho, they're going to give you some good minutes. But they're probably, you know, in a playoff game, I would suspect, you know, the third pair is going to be closer to 13, 14 minutes while, yeah.
Well, just real quick on that same Turner Zoom I was on, Ed Olczyk was giving huge props to Riley as a great addition and for Lou for bringing him in. He thought he's been really valuable on multiple levels.
Yeah, no, he has been. He's a little bit risk-reward. He likes getting up the ice with the puck, and he's been caught up ice a few times. But, you know, he's contributed to the offense, and he's a steady pro. He knows how to play this NHL game. So he's very – I agree with Eddie O that, you know, the Islanders were certainly hurting. They had a lot of injuries amongst their defense corps this year. You talk about getting to 82. Noah Dobson was the only one amongst the defense corps that had a chance to get to 82 games this season, and he fell, you know, three games short. Both Pelech and Pulak, long absences. Scott Mayfield, season-ending a surgery with the ankle that bothered him all year. Bortuzzo with a lengthy absence. Riley, who was a waiver pickup from the Panthers. The Panthers couldn't use him. And Bortuzzo, too. You know, he cost a seventh-round pick from the Blues, and I don't quite know where the Islanders would have been without that defense depth, given you know, the injuries they did have.
Before you ask me my music question, I did watch the Eras tour. So if you have if you're asking me a Taylor Swift question, I'll be ready.
You know what? You could stump me with Taylor Swift stuff. As we were walking in, I honestly know this is going to sound like I'm from the the Middle Ages, but I said to Neil, because he mentioned to me that he had seen the Eras tour. I said this is not a leading question. Honestly, just tell me, is she good? I don't know.
Just to be clear, I did not see it in person or theater. I saw it on TV.
You're not a Swiftie.
No, I have nothing against her. I just don't.
Are you a Swiftie?
Ask me the music question.
Are you a Swiftie?
I have nothing against her. Ask me the question.
That's not a yes or a no.
No, I'm not a Swiftie. No, I just. But she's a good performer. I saw her at a lot of football games this year.
All right, here's your musical question, Neil.
Am I allowed to phone a friend? We have a friend nearby.
Yeah, we actually have a live audience for this. Yeah. This is fantastic. Newsday friend and contributor Dennis Gorman has been sitting patiently next to us. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Andrew. Hi, Neil.
All right. And Dennis, if you know the answer, feel free to jump in on this
Please.
One. This bassist is currently on tour for the first time in 40 years with this thrash metal act from Queens that he helped found and wrote a good portion of their debut album, the only album he did appear on, A Fistful of Metal. Name this bassist and the band.
It's not Wyman. What do you know? I don't know the answer to this question. You know, speaking of the Stones, I saw a video recently of the taping of Sympathy for the Devil, and for some reason I did not know that Keith Richards was playing bass. Keith Richards played bass on Sympathy for the Devil.
Well, yeah, probably he was, because he wrote the riff, too, so he was probably just, in the studio that day.
I don't know the answer to your...
Dennis?
Maybe Joey Ramone, but I'm sure he's dead.
So. Yes. Yeah. Also, he was a singer.
But he was from Queens.
He was from Queens. The answer, Neil and Dennis, is Dan Lilker from Bayside, who founded Anthrax with Bayside High School classmate Scott Ian, and is now filling in for longtime bassist Frank Bello on their tour, because Frank Bello was unavailable. So the answer is Dan Lilker of Anthrax.
You know, if you had just given me a couple extra minutes, I would have come up with that, but I felt rushed.
And we'll have another question for Neil on the next episode of Island Ice. For any and all Newsday content, please go to newsday.com/sports, where you can find Neil's fine columns and all of my upcoming playoff coverage. Till the next episode of Island Ice, Newsday's New York Islanders podcast. Happy hockey, everybody.